The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 52 from the Book of Serenity. Attention! Sao Shan asked Elder Day, "The Buddha's true Dharma body is like vast space. It manifests in appearances and in response to beings like the moon in water. How can this principle of response be expressed?" Day said, "It is like a donkey looking at a well." Sao Shan said, "Well said, but that's only 80% of it." Day answered, "How about you, teacher?" Sao Shan said, "Like the well looking at the donkey." Attention, Sao Shan asked Elder Day, "The Buddha's true Dharma body is like vast space. It manifests in appearances and in response to beings like the moon in water. How can this principle of response be expressed?" Day said, "It's like a donkey looking at a well." Sao Shan said, "Well said, but that's only 80% of it." Day answered, "How about you, teacher?" Sao Shan said, "Like the well looking at the donkey." So this morning, the sun shines brightly through the windows here in our meditation hall. The wind blows strongly, and here we are warm and sharing this precious time together. It's easy on retreats, especially longer retreats, to imagine that we are at the beginning or the middle or the end, and we can imagine, I have one day left, or I have 1 week left. But in truth, of course, we don't know. We don't know what will happen, and we might imagine, boy, I hope to do this next year, or I hope to do the retreat in March, or we make all of these plans. Quite natural in some way, but looking closer, which is what we are doing. This whole business of meditation is an invitation to look closer, an invitation to find out for yourself. And as we do this, we see that we don't know about tomorrow. And though, of course, we have stories about yesterday and our life, the truth is we really don't know about the past. Always wonderful to compare stories with a friend about something that happened, or even more with a family member. And we begin to see that this past that seems so real, and this is what happened to me, actually is quite insubstantial, quite different, seen from different perspectives, and even the memories that seem so real are actually different from the memories you had 5, 10, 20 years ago. So we don't know how many days or hours of sesshin we have to come. We don't know what happened to us before. If we're honest, we don't even know what's going on now. So Here we are in the middle of this big don't know, as my teacher's teacher said, this is all that is necessary. Only don't know. Only give up fixed opinions for and against. And we are able to find our footing that is no footing. To find our home, which is right here. In this great spacious and wondrous and mysterious present. Not a dot on some imaginary line. Suzuki Roshi said, breathing in, the inner world is limitless. Breathing out, the outer world is limitless. We live our life. We live our life in death. Of course, death not some unexpected accident or problem, but part of this this precious moment, life and death. Here we live it all right here, all in this limitless world. And so this a wonderful koan about Cao Shan, one of the founders of the Cao Dang school, or the Soto, what became the Soto school in Japan, and his interchange with one of his students. The teacher, Cao Shan, asks his student, his, Elder Day, so not some beginning student, not some rookie fresh in off the street, but I would imagine someone who has really looked into the matter, who has devoted his life to the practice, and I think maybe too devoted his life to Cao Shan. Cao Shan not as individual, but the Dharma does not present itself in a vacuum, but this Buddha Dharma is a relationship. It arises, and teachers to be revered not as not even so much as models, certainly not as perfectly enlightened people, but as the Dharma appearing now in this form. And one of the wonderful things about our Boundless Way school and multiple teachers is that I hope you see that everyone presents the Dharma so individually and exactly. So the job of the student, the job of the teacher, is not to become like someone else. And this can be very challenging when you have great appreciation for your teacher. I studied with George Bowman for several decades, and have a great gratitude to him as my teacher and the one who passed on this transmission of the elders to me. One of the problems studying with George is that I was so appreciative of his Dharma, of his great and deep wisdom, that for many, many years I supposed that I should be like him. Which, of course, is a hopeless task. He, on his part, was quite discouraging and would often tell me that he was hoping to be more like me. Part of the gift of growing and maturing is that we can appreciate our teachers for who they are, not as perfect exemplars, but as vehicles through which the Dharma finds voice. So Elder Day clearly in Shan had found someone to be in relation with him, to walk with him, and in turn, Day, I suppose, supported Shan, gave his life to make it possible, and this retreat, this temple, is not the product of any individuals, and so many people have made it possible for us to be sitting here. Jenny, our Tenzo and Registrar, Esther, our Shuso, Ray, our Jiki, and facilities manager, and you, you make this possible by by being here, by giving your heart, by reverently participating. We all bow down to the Dharma and offer ourselves to the Dharma. Maybe a short Dharma talk, but I'm okay, thanks. But probably not. Shan, teacher, asked the senior student. He says, "The Buddha's true Dharmakaya body is like vast space." So, some background here. Dharmakaya, a body, is part of a teaching that there are three bodies of Buddha, and we might say three aspects or three entry points. And Dharmakaya is the source world. Dharmakaya points to the vast space of silence. This vast world where nothing can be said about it. Any word cannot touch this great, we might say, emptiness, or this great potential, this field from which everything comes, this mysterious source world. So this Dharmakaya, and perhaps as we sit, Dharmakaya is that great stillness, the great silence that actually includes all of the sounds of the world. But it is possible sometimes as we sit to sink into, to settle in not as effort of will, of directing oneself, I will be quiet now. But sometimes, sometimes when the mind exhausts itself, sometimes when the light comes in the window just right, things settle down, not through our decision to settle down, but in truth, it's how it is for human beings, and sometimes it gets quieter. And there is a possibility to settle and to settle. And we say stillness, but of course we're always in movement. And of course there is always more and more still. There is, for me, some way taking this backward step, as Dogen said, where we settle into the world of our belly button, going inside, not headed anywhere. And this is Dharmakaya. We sit upright, entering this world. You cannot storm the gates of heaven, William Blake said. You cannot force your way or concentrate your way. but this Dharmakaya, this great silence everywhere appears. So this is first body of Buddha, Dharmakaya. Second body, Sambhogakaya, the appreciation body or bliss body. So many ways to think about this, but one might be that in this silence, this vast spaciousness of emptiness, of potential, something appears. The sound of a wind, the wind, a cough, the sun suddenly getting stronger coming out from behind a cloud. So something appears, and this appearance we can appreciate from this place of stillness. We can see the shining floor, the shadows on the floor. We can hear the wind, and not even we hear it, but there is just the sound arising, just the sight, just the sensation. So in this field of emptiness, in the boundless field of emptiness, we might say, everything appears. And this Sambhogakaya is a world of freedom and unlimited. This morning in our sutra service, we read the Song of the Jeweled Mirror Samadhi, which is one of the root texts of the Soto tradition, in, especially in Japan. On retreat in a traditional Soto temple, you would chant this every other day with the harmony of relative and absolute as the alternating day. But so many wonderful things here. But at one point it says, wooden man starts to sing, stone woman gets up dancing. This is the world of Sambhogakaya. The world of koans is the world of Sambhogakaya. Recently, a student was asked to imagine what it was like to put himself in the role of one of these characters in a koan. And he said, I can't do that. That was somebody from medieval Japan. How can I know? But we can know because we can dream. These words, these stories of long ago, of course, are right here. This is the world of the Sambhogakaya, which is true, not false. Everything that has ever happened is here. And so the world of the poetic, the world of images, and I think one of the wonderful things of this Zen tradition is the love of poetry and perhaps the appreciation that the mind works on so many levels. And for all of us, there are moments when these images or phrases come alive in some mysterious way. Could be a phrase we've heard for years and years, and suddenly it glows and shines and seems so true and so filled with life. So this is the Sambhogakaya appearing as we sit here, so appreciating all of the arising. Sambhogakaya, that's number two. So Dharmakaya, one, two, Sambhogakaya, three, Nirmanakaya. And the Nirmanakaya is the activity body or the action body, realization body. So Sambhogakaya is enacting fully. In this moment. So it is in walking meditation. We are just walking, and our walking is the expression of our great love, our walking is our expression of our understanding of what it means to be alive. And in this walking, we walk together, we join together, and yet each one of us fully expressing our individuality. And as we sit in the same way, as we sit, we manifest our great love. This activity of Zen is not an activity of willpower. It is not a matter of getting stronger and stronger in some rigid kind of way. But it is a matter of being ourself. And being yourself is quite different than being who you think you are. So often we get stuck in being some kind of imitation of ourself. But this being who you are is being the person who you can never know. You cannot stand outside of yourself, as we discussed last week. Each one of you has a light. Each one of us has a light, and if you try to see it, you cannot. But we can manifest this light by giving ourselves to the moment, and the Nirmanakaya is giving ourselves to the activity of the moment, and sitting upright and still is certainly an activity. We say one posture yoga. And sitting in this dynamic stillness, and willing to share ourself as we are, willing, practicing sharing ourself as we are, with no guarantee. So we enter into this world of not knowing, and we manifest our love in our stillness and in our silence. Each one of us perfectly being ourself. So these are the three bodies of Buddha. And in this koan, talking about the Buddha's true Dharmakaya, the body, the Buddha's true Dharma body, kaya means body, is like vast space. And then the teacher says, it manifests in appearances in response to beings. This Dharmakaya, this great source world, this great undifferentiated field of possibility, manifests in appearance in response to beings like the moon in the water. How can this principle of response be expressed? So we've been talking about this principle of response, or practicing it in some ways in our chanting in the afternoon. In our Om Nam, we talk about call and response. And this teaching is that life itself is call and response. And the root expression of this might be Buddha's teaching of dependent co-arising, praticca samuppada. The Buddha taught that the self and the world create each other. The self and the world mutually create each other. And this is the reading from Uchiyama Roshi that has become one of the top five on the jukebox of sutra service. The whole world is your true self. Usually we think, well, I'll find my true self and then I'll take my true self out for a walk and see what we can see. But this true self, the essence of life, is not something that is separate. And I suppose we could say all of these koans are designed to help us see through this delusion of separation. In the Jeweled Mirror Samadhi, the line that struck me when I chose this, this Jeweled Mirror Samadhi, Samadhi is a state of absorption, and so the Jeweled Mirror, the teaching that life is a mirror, a self sees the self, the donkey sees the well. And in the song of the Jeweled Mirror Samadhi, it says, facing a precious mirror, a form and reflection behold each other. Usually in our mind, we think, well, I am the one, I see the tree. This is the donkey sees the well. This is quite a wondrous thing when we really see what we see or hear what we hear. And in this seeing and in this hearing, there is no gap. So when we look closer, as we look closer, really listening, really walking, in the walking, if you look closely, you will notice that there is no one standing outside of the walking. There is no one who is walking. Uchiyama says, your true self is not separate from the function of your life. So there is only walking. And in the hearing, there is not some little person inside who is a big ear, there is sound and there is hearing, and it happens without effort. It is actually not directional. There is this arising, so in this conversation, or in this line, facing a precious mirror, form and reflection behold each other. I see the tree, and the tree sees me. I hear the wind outside, the wind and I are listening together, are hearing together. In the field of awareness, which we might call big self, something appears, some thought, some sensation. We could call this little self. We could call it a subject and object. But there is this field of awareness that is not, does not belong to you. That we have no idea how it operates, but it operates effortlessly. And in this field, big self needs little self. Little self needs big self. You need the world. The world needs you. We encounter something beyond comprehension. Song of the Jeweled Mirror Samadhi says, it is like two arrows meeting in midair. This meeting of incomprehensibles at exactly this point with no gap at all. Sometimes we talk about closing the gap, but if you look for the gap, you cannot find it. This effortless function of life itself in the form of you and in the form of me. Form and reflection behold each other. The donkey sees the well, and the well sees the donkey. This seamless unity is what is life itself, and everything springs out of this, the myriad problems and delights. Even separation is included in this great unity, all part of this wondrous, precious mirror that we call life, that is not separate from you, not separate from me, this life and death that we can give ourselves to, that we can explore and sing praises of and complain about and while away our hours here in the meditation hall in such good company. Case 52 from the Book of Serenity. Sao Shan asked Elder Day, "The Buddha's true Dharma body is like vast space. It manifests in appearances in response to beings like the moon in water. How can this principle of response be expressed?" Day said, "Like a donkey looking at a well." Sao Shan said, "Well said, but that's only 80% of it." Day answered, "How about you, teacher?" Sao Shan said, "Like the well looking at the donkey." Thank you. So please sit comfortably. We'll have our Dharma dialogue, and as usual, we're being recorded and listened to by people all over the world who report with gratitude being able to sit in here with us. So we welcome all the people who are listening and here in that way. And if there's something you'd like to say, we're happy to pause the recording. Yeah.
I enjoyed your talk. I got fixated on one of the first sentences, and then I heard the last. It was a little different. But it was how Dharmakaya manifests in response to the...
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, I never saw it that way. It was the, you know, Dharma chooses to manifest itself for its own play, for its own enjoyment, for its own, you know, whatever, as this, that, and... So what does it respond to in beings, if not itself, right? So it's responding to itself as a three-dimensional, you know, body in Dharmakaya.
I love that you're saying that, because this is a koan. One of the things that the first sentence of a teacher or a student does is set things up in a way that would make you go, wait a minute, what? Just like you did?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, the Dharmakaya is utter vastness, emptiness. Things are moving and, right, just what you described. But he's challenging it. He's like taking, Sao Shan is, taking us to another way of looking at it. And of course, Elder Day falls for it too, just like we all did. And then ultimately, you know, through all these little steps, the well looks at the donkey. It shakes us up into, if we heard the first line as, you know, the Dharmakaya is responding to beings, that sets up a kind of duality, which isn't part of the Dharmakaya.
Right.
Donkey looks at the well, that makes sense. But wait a minute, there's something else going on here that's very mysterious and not so easily... We tend to do subject and object a lot. And the Dharmakaya is beyond subject and object. But we can talk about it in any way to point that out.
So I mean, I got hooked on that first piece.
Mm-hmm.
And, but what happened is I lost all the rest. I kind of like played back there. Yeah, I know. You know, it's like, okay, this fades into it. But I got so I wasn't able to fully develop what he was talking about unless I spent time with the koan.
Well, a couple ways. One benefit of that is that all the rest of the talk went in deep. while you were up here concerned with this, can appreciate probably deep down inside this is quite a valuable talk for you, even though you have no awareness of it. The other thing is that there is another aspect of the teaching and is manifest sometimes with Kanzeon, which we call out. We are encouraged to call out, to ask for help. And the teaching is that the moment you call out, Kanzeon responds. So it's not like there's a gap. And of course, as we do our Om Nam, what a beautiful answer and manifestation in the calling out. One teaching, actually, that Reb Anderson talks about in this call and response, the different positions, is that there are four different positions. The first is that we are not conscious of calling out, and we are not conscious of the response. But in some way, just to sit, our zazen is our calling out. Our intention to be in the moment is our calling out. But usually we're not even conscious. I'm just trying to eat my breakfast. And I've got something else to do. The second position is that we're not conscious of calling out, and we are conscious of the response. So I'm not calling out, but my goodness, this breakfast is delicious. Right? And moments when the world lights up, when I'm just walking along minding my own business and someone looks at me and says, please take care of yourself. Right? The third position is I'm conscious of calling out, but I'm not conscious of the response. So this is when I say, I want it like this. And then, well, clearly there's no response because it's not happening, right? But clearly the response is there. Otherwise I'd be dead, right? If there's not that mutuality. And then the fourth is we're conscious of calling out and conscious of the response. So many ways to look at this, and I think they're all so important.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one more thing about how wonderful it was that you got hooked on that first line. So the Dharmakaya is great vastness. There's no differentiation. But it includes Nirmanakaya and Sambhogakaya. So there is differentiation.
Yes.
There really is. and it's like, yes. What? Yes. No, that doesn't make sense. Sao Shan, how many years ago did he live? But the way that the awakened heart manifests hasn't changed much. Some culturally, yes, as David pointed out, that student who said, well, I can't identify with these people because, this was 1,000 years ago. But of course, we're learning a language to speak about something that has it's not like ordinary language. And so anywhere you get stuck in a koan is a really fruitful place. And it doesn't make any difference. And if you don't get stuck and you just go through it, like sliding like a pig,
a greased pig in a pool with a watermelon.
Yeah, with a watermelon. Good for you, and hopefully you'll get stuck somewhere else. And I don't mean stuck in the, but...
Right, but
caught. But like, what? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
That isn't the way I see it.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Wonderful. And I think of Elder Day a little bit. You're Elder Ray.
Elder Ray. So Elder Will?
I'm middle-aged.
I love the talk, and I love the Reb Anderson thing. I hadn't read that. That's lovely. I guess the thing that struck me is, the oldest image in Buddhism, but it's in Sao Shan's question, like the moon and water. And what's great about that is that I find that all my ways of thinking about no effort are effortful. Subtly effortful, and they're all kind of like, not quite yet, almost there, just a little adjustment. A little more zazen. The great thing about the moon and water, it's not just that the water doesn't have to do anything, it's that it can't help it. It cannot but reflect the moon, right?
Yeah.
It's already happening. There is no... And so for me, it's a better image. It sort of combines the images of the donkey and the well looking at each other, because looking sounds intentional. It's like, are you looking at the right thing?
Yeah.
And you see that it's looking at you, but it's not like that.
Right?
It's the moon in water. The water, there's no choice. It's already there.
Yeah.
It's already there. Both moons. You really, you know, you can try it. Do whatever you want. You can't stop it.
This is the effortless functioning.
Yeah.
That Linchi says, your exact functioning is no different from the Buddhas and the ancestors.
Yeah.
Right at this moment. Already happening.
Oh,
yeah.
It's beautiful.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Elder Seamus?
I'm struggling with another, I don't have to speak anymore, another something about response. And it's, how do I know when to be with the breath, and how do I know when to take right action? I'm experiencing myself like a learner driver. I start, I stop, I start, I stop. I can't. Because I'm wanting to learn how to drive, then I don't have the option of turning the engine off and getting out of the car.
Yeah.
I want to learn how to drive, so I try again. Stop, start, stop, start. So there's something about... so I can turn to the breath with whatever is arising.
Mm.
But when, how do I know when to take some right action? I'm not talking about the driving metaphor, but in a situation in life which is difficult, in which there is an observing of action wanted, or of something happening that doesn't seem that it's getting the right attention. And then there's something very particular this is coming from in an experience very recently.
Okay.
So this is such a great question, right? Because this is the one we all ask. So I'm sitting on the cushion, I'm learning how to be with my breath, and but what about in my life? How do I know how to respond?
Right. Yeah.
And so there is a secret book of rules on how to respond as a Zen person. And if you'd like to have a copy, you have to give up your life. That's the cost. You know, there's no book like that, right? Because, David's just but this is what we long for. What do I do? And the thing is, everything... Listen, Seamus, don't start talking yet. and don't even think, but listen. Listen, right? Listen. Be here. Take this in. This is really important. The mind that's rising up right now is not receiving anything. So really, really hear this. There is no set of rules. There's only practice. And what we're doing when we're in stillness and silence is we're practicing, if you're doing breath practice, as you described, we're practicing learning how to return to the breath. If we're doing Shikantaza, we're learning how to practice being present to everything. And it's contextual, because sitting still, that's all you get, or maybe koan practice too, but that's it. Then we get up, the bell rings, we learn how to respond. The mind objects, I don't want to get up right now, I'm having a great time here. No, ring, get up, you know, unless your legs are asleep, which happened earlier today. So the response, actually that's a great example. So the bell rings, we respond, but my legs are asleep, so I'm going to stay and rub them. That's right action. In that moment, everything is context. And we try to make things simple so we can learn how to do this. And then you leave the temple, and everything is so wild and crazy. We try to give you little bits of the wild and crazy in Samu, in Doksan, in eating, right? But that's still pretty simple. Then you go out. The lessons you've learned by keeping things really simple, are not a strategy that you can then do, but they start to arise from your body as a response. It's like the well looking at the donkey. It's not you doing it, saying, what should I do now? What should I do now? It just comes from you because you've been sincerely throwing yourself into this practice for many, many days, many, many years. Actually, even before you found Zen practice, you've been practicing this. And the results are a kind of spontaneous meeting of your life.
And so let's all come back to our Zen posture and meet our life, practice this great way with great sincerity.